Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Ramblers. Chrissy Houghton is back in the game and Gunnosaurus is back in his suit. It's Wednesday, the 7th of October. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Vidushan Hantaraja.
It's the middle of the week. Us three back together. It's been a while, boys. How are you both?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm good. I thought it was important to come back on the show as quickly as possible after the slander against my name on Monday.
What happened?
Just Kate Mason said that I'm ducking her.
Oh yeah.
The weekend's result.
Yeah.
I think you were.
I think when you witness a result like that at the weekend and then one side of the fence steps up and the other one doesn't. Questions are going to be asked.
I genuinely had friends of mine message me yesterday morning saying, Vish, is everything all right? I heard you weren't on the ramble, as if I'd pulled out last minute.
Well, you did leave the WhatsApp group.
Well, I mean,
temporarily.
That was a great move, by the way.
you've got to do what you've got to do. People, you know, Kate Mason was saying I was ducking her. You know, I just had other things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're probably on again soon together. When is she next on?
I'm not sure. Tomorrow? I don't know. Next week.
I am busy all of next week.
Is that right?
One day.
You couldn't get any work yet earlier?
Don't tell them that. Don't deal with them down here.
Looking at all the crazy results so far this season, United beating Brighton's biggest upset so far, Vish.
Yeah. Also, bother. Can I just say, Jules, like leaving the WhatsApp group when you're a Man United fan is not a sustainable strategy because I don't think it's going to get any better, mate.
Who put him back in it, by the way?
Me. I have to. I'm the admin, obviously.
Yeah.
I get all the admin jobs.
You should have left him out for a bit longer, made him sweat.
Like 6 months?
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. By the time I got readmitted, Spurs scored a fourth. And I did think about the fifth. Maybe I should go now. I definitely should have gone after the sixth. But I'm still here. I'm glad to be here. What can I say?
We're glad
it's Wednesday
back,
now. Football moves quick.
Don't worry. Well, speaking of that United result, it was... I mean, since then, there's been so much talk with the transfer window closing, with the signings they've brought in, Cavani being probably one of the highlights in terms of did you really need a player like him? There are reports now that Manchester United have made contact with Maurizio Pochettino to become the new manager. What do you make of this, Vish? Do you think there's any truth in it?
It definitely wasn't planted by me.
Like I said, it's Wednesday now, a few days since Man United, and football moves quickly. So we're going to lead the show today by talking about Man United, Vish.
Well, when I went on my, when I had my little tiff a couple of weeks ago, that was, you know, about Solskjaer not being the man for the job. That was with, the, I suppose, you know, something that I said, with the idea that there would be people to bring in. One of those would be Pochettino, the other one being Allegri. And Pochettino has been around for basically ever since he left the Spurs job. He's been someone who United have been constantly linked with. And I think the important thing here is to, if we can equate it to what Manchester United have done with Jadon Sancho, the quest for Jadon Sancho, the reason there was so much put on it is because this is the best shot United have of getting Jadon Sancho. Because when it comes to the next time around and, you know, the end of this season, more teams are going to be in for him. But this was United's chance to really go at him.
And his price will only go up.
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of the same thing with Pochettino, because a lot of other clubs were pretty settled in a way, especially when Chelsea nailed their colours to the mast with Lampard. And there is a bit of a fear now, I'm gauging, that, you know, when enough of the season goes through and enough teams start looking at their own house, suddenly there might be some other vacancies that Pochettino might want to take.
Yeah, and the problem in opposition, I think there's two issues at Man United that you can broadly kind of section off. One is that the hierarchy is a mess, right? And so we know about the fact that there's no real sporting director there to speak of any kind of note. And we know that the first team's a mess because Vish and I would say that the coach is probably out of his depth, right? So they're the two problems. And when you talk about Solskjaer not being good enough, or the players not being coached properly, or the performance they put in against Spurs, it is legitimate to say that the coach isn't good enough. It's not an excuse for the coach to then say, well, the hierarchy's not good enough either. So for Man United fans, some of whom have got the word Solskjaer in their Twitter usernames, literally, will say, well, it's not Solskjaer's fault. Well, my answer to that is it is partly Solskjaer's fault, because the way to look at it, I believe, is that if you're going to stick to this system, and the Glazers and the hierarchy at Man United have shown that they don't have any real pressing need to change it by what we've seen so far, right? Then you might as well just go and get the best coach you can. Go and get the best coach you can, because if you can persuade a top coach like Pochettino to work under those circumstances, then you should actually absolutely do that, because that's a massive upgrade on Solskjaer. But the problem is, I think Pochettino will have been out of work a year next month.
Yeah, November, so he was sacked.
Yeah, right, yeah. So he's clearly not going to... He's not someone who's jumping into jobs. He clearly wants to curate his own career properly. I think he probably should do that, because managers in the modern game find it pretty easy to fall off the perch and never really rated the same way again. And so maybe he's not going to be persuaded to work at Man United under that current environment, which I kind of respect, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely spot on there, because it's not just the case that if there is a vacancy, you offer to Pochettino, he's going to say yes. Bear in mind that one of the main issues he had at Spurs, and certainly something that drove him to the end of his tether, was the inability to refresh their squad and do it effectively. He would have a list of players that he wanted to get, and Daniel Levy wouldn't play ball. Conversely, at Manchester United, they identify someone in Sancho. They spend 2 months, you know, briefing everyone about how they're going to get him, and then it's on the last day of the transfer window, It all comes crashing down. Or rather, they have to kind of admit that they're not getting anywhere, and they miss that opportunity. So in that regard, you know, is Pochettino going to look at that and think, well, I mean, their house is a complete mess above, you know, the manager station. I want to be involved in that?
Well, the only thing going for Man United is that they're Man United, right? So you talk about players like, I mean, even Edison Cavani said it yesterday, didn't he? I mean, you know, the story of his career and the fact that Man United is a massive thing. If you could, you know, in 15 years' time, and you look back on your career, if you can say that you played up front for Manchester United, that is still a thing. If you can say that you manage Man United, that is also still a thing. But to me, at the moment, when taking it in the round, other teams in the Premier League, other teams in Europe who are doing well and who are in better positions than Man United, other than that, there's not really much going for them, you know. So it's kind of interesting that you would argue that Mauricio Pochettino should go to Man United, because it's a great opportunity for him to win trophies, something that's he's been criticised for in the past. But actually, when you dig down a little bit deeper, is that actually the case? I don't know if it is.
I know exactly what you mean about Manchester United still being Manchester United, because I remember back in, you know, the 2010s when, you know, Manchester United was still that Manchester United. And someone made the point that Manchester United as a brand itself will never go bankrupt, a bit like Coca-Cola. They'll always have that attraction because of the success they have and because of the, I suppose, credit in the bank, quite literally in this case with these owners. But I don't think that carries water to the people that matter, to the people that actually want to, the people that you need to, I suppose, to continue that legacy of Manchester United. It doesn't matter to top players. It doesn't matter to top managers either. Mm. And it doesn't actually matter to top administrators when you think that one of United's main issues is that they probably need a director of football, certainly under someone like, over someone like Solskjaer. But they're not in line to get any of the, you know, decent. Rangnick's probably the only person who could come in and do a decent job, but he's not going to want to take that.
I think the interesting thing with this is that what this transfer window for Manchester United has probably shown is that in terms of the signings that Manchester United have made, there seems to be a bit of a lack of direction. Because if you're going to be bringing in players like Cavani, it's a short-term solution, isn't it, Vish? This isn't a player who they maybe necessarily should have prioritised. Of course, he's quality and you look at his CV and you know that he's going to do a job and of course he'll get goals and he is that out and out number nine that maybe Manchester United haven't had since Lukaku left. That all makes sense, but in terms of priorities, perhaps it shouldn't have been top of Manchester United's list. And this all kind of feeds into what direction are Manchester United going in after this summer window. You can't really see it still. And I think that that seems to be the issue. And where Pochettino then comes into this is I think that what it would do for Manchester United fans, and you could probably tell me better, Vish, but I think that if Pochettino was the manager at Manchester United, perhaps fans would maybe start to believe that there was a certain direction that the team were going in, and maybe that would be the start of it. I know he spoke to Melissa Reddy recently on Between the Lines, and he spoke very openly about where he wanted that next challenge to be. And for him, he said he felt that he wanted to work somewhere where he felt personally invested in the club and its people. And I think that that almost sounds to me like he wants a project in a way, similarly to what he had with Spurs, where he took them from a certain level and took them a lot higher than maybe people were expecting in that period of time. And obviously, we all know how it all ended at Tottenham. But I feel like with Manchester United, it does seem like the perfect fit, albeit I'm not really sure what Manchester United fans would prefer right now. Would they prefer Ole to stay and maybe work more on the signings being brought in, or would they want a manager change?
Well, it's that age-old conundrum of it's easy to get rid of one man than five players and then bring five players in. So if you look at what Pochettino did specifically at Southampton as well, when he took them to eighth, I think that's still their highest Premier League finish, isn't it? He raised the game of players who didn't know they could reach that level above. And that kind of manifested itself in Morgan Schneiderlin moving on and Ward-Prowse, I suppose, eventually playing for England and stuff like that. But with the squad that United have now, there is a lot of talent there. I don't buy the fact that they're suddenly all NAF players and we've got to get rid of them.
Yeah, no way.
And I think Pochettino is someone who, as you saw also with Spurs, that he came in and he just put a bit of maturity in those players, a bit of discipline as well. I think the most disheartening thing about what happened in the second half of that Spurs game, and apologies to listeners who are probably bored of hearing about this game, but one of the most jarring things was the lack of discipline, and that kind of manifested itself in the way that Luke Shaw took out, I think it was Lucas Moura, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that disgraceful tackle. That didn't look like a players who wanted to, not necessarily play for a manager, but they weren't fearful of what he might of any kind of shouting at or issue that he might have with their display. And I think Pochettino will bring in that gravitas. But then at the same time, it's important to say that this isn't going to suddenly fix all of United's issues from the top down. But it will be if the owners are going to be as they are, then they'll need someone who's a bit stronger beneath them, and that is Pochettino, I think.
Look, let's get it absolutely right. At the top level, when you're beating 6-1 at home, it's a watershed moment. The same way that Liverpool were beaten heavily by Aston Villa, that's a watershed moment for them. What they're going to do? What they're going to do to arrest the decline in intensity and performances they've experienced since around February time? Now, they had the results to get over the line and win the Premier League, but close watchers of Liverpool will know that the intensity has not been as good since around February time. And, COVID has been bit like a fog of war, kind of obscuring everyone's kind of critical assessment of things, and that's understandable. But the same thing happened when Southampton were beaten by Leicester 9-0. I mean, there was a big summit and they made the decisions they made, and it looks like they made the right decision. The point I'm making is that decisions have to be made when these things happen, particularly the manner of the defeat they suffered at home to Tottenham. I feel like this Pochettino news, it's just part of the dance around the club because they're in a massive moment. And the reason they're in a massive moment is because they've lost heavily. They've not performed well since the start of this season. And they're about to embark upon a very tough period of fixtures where they're not going to really come up for breath until they play West Brom at home towards the end of November. The next 6 weeks, 7 weeks or so,
they've got some astonishingly
tough games. Mm. We're going to learn a lot about them in a couple of weeks when they go to Newcastle, because that could go either way. And if it goes one way, it's not going to get any easier for Man United fans and for the club for the foreseeable future. And then they're going to have a really big decision to make. Because if they get to the Everton game at sort of first week in November away from home and they lose that and they've been on a terrible run, which is essentially by then torpedoed their Champions League aspirations, because they'll play three Champions League games, I think, as well. They're going to be in big trouble. So they've got to pick their way through this period really, really carefully. Mm. And I wonder if the Pochettino link is kind of just part of that. Maybe it's leaked out, it's got out, they've made some kind of tentative approach because they're assessing their options. We don't know, but I think it's all part of the dance.
I do find it all fascinating though, Vish, because the end of last season, they were the best team in the Premier League, you'd say. They had the best run of form, unbeaten, post-lockdown till the end of the season. So how much can really change between the end of the Premier League season, them getting to the Europa League semi-finals, crashing out in that game, and then coming back? Like, I don't understand how so much can change in that space of time, because this is the same group of players, bar a couple of additions coming. I just don't get how much can change.
But it's volatile because Solskjaer's not got a handle on it. I mean, Vish, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Vish, but a while ago you were saying Man United, they're going to beat average teams a lot because they've got a lot of good players, and that's going to be enough for them, right?
Yeah.
When they come under the pressure and the way they reacted, particularly in the second half against Spurs, as you've already said, It's very, very indicative of the fact that he's not got a handle on it. You know, people say, you know, a blind squirrel will occasionally find a nut, right? Solskjaer will find a lot of nuts because he's got a lot of great squirrels helping him find them. But we will
pay good money for that squirrel. Give us 2 months.
This metaphor's already broken down, but I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think one of Solskjaer's main strengths is that he's a good motivator. He's very personable. And I think that manifests itself in two different ways. You will get players playing for you, but you will also get players who think, right, we can probably just coast a bit under this. This guy's a nice guy.
100%.
And I think with...
They've hired the Clive Tilsley commentary from the 99 Champions League final to manage Man United.
Basically, yeah, yeah. And now United don't always score.
But Solskjaer has fucked it. That's what I should be saying.
But from a personal point of view, for Solskjaer, he's going to find out a lot about these players, because he knows Solskjaer's always been able to sleep well at night knowing that he's well liked by these players. And now, over the next couple of weeks, over the next 5 weeks of these fixtures, he's going to find out if they actually respect him.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think I already know the answer, but we'll find out for sure.
Yeah. Let's move on and talk about Chrissy Hughton. He's back in management. And I, for one, am absolutely delighted.
One of your faves.
He is one of my faves. He's an absolute
lovely fellow,
legend.
Isn't he?
He's honestly one of the nicest people in football you can meet. And I'm not just saying that being a Brighton fan and for everything he did for the club. He genuinely is one of the nicest people you can come across in football. And he is now the new Nottingham Forest boss. And you know what? I'm not surprised to see him in this role. He also, similarly to what we were just saying about Pochettino, after he was sacked from Brighton, I spoke to him because we come across each other in the same workplace at the Premier League, where he's come in to do some media work. And he said to me, you know, I'm going to wait until there's a job that I really want to take. I'm not just going to jump in and take any job. And he'd had offers at that stage when I spoke to him last year and had turned them down. So he's been waiting for the right job for him. And with Nottingham Forest, he obviously sees that there is certainly something that he can achieve with this group of players. It's been so interesting to see Nottingham Forest start to this season, because they've played 4 matches in the league. They've lost every single one of those games. And a couple of those games that you look at, they should have won. When you look at the type of players that they have in comparison to the teams they've lost to. But also Sabri Lamouchi, the previous Nottingham Forest manager, made 12 signings this summer. 12 signings, which is a crazy amount of players to bring in. So it seems as though there was obviously something going on there, because the club have allowed him to bring in 12 new players to the club. The start to the season's been so poor. Obviously, they fell off a cliff at the end of last season, but it really is sliding doors for Nottingham Forest. You know, the matter of one goal last season could have seen them in the playoffs, and then who knows what would have happened. Yet they come into this season under the same manager, a whole host of new players, more than a squad full of new players, and they've lost every single game. So I'm not surprised to see Lamouchi go, but there is obviously something that Chris Hughton can see that he can work on with this club. And I'm fascinated to see how it goes.
Yeah, I think the short answer might well be that Sabri Lamucci wasn't in charge of signing those players. I think that's probably part of it.
I think it's 13 players as well.
13 yeah, now, is there? Yeah. Well, I missed one.
I read yesterday that they've made 70 signings in 3 years. So, I mean, look, I'll come into the detail on that in a little bit, but I would first of all like to say that this is the biggest job outside the Premier League. I mean, if you look at the size of the club, you look at their history, you look at what they've been trying to do for such a long time now, and they are historically, some people may care more about that than others, but for me it's important, I think. Historically, they're a top-level club. They're a top-tier club. So this is the biggest job outside the Premier League, right? Chris Hughton's record in the Championship is unreal. Mm. Four seasons, I think it is. Four top four finishes, yep. I think, all the fours. He's got promoted with Newcastle and Brighton, as we know.
I think he took Birmingham to the playoffs, didn't he?
He's done an excellent job in that division in the past. But, I mean, before I get into Lamucci, I mean, we should say, you know, it's not a magic formula. I mean, you look at what managers who've got good reputations have tried to do with Sunderland and not been able to do it. Kenny Jackett's got an amazing reputation of getting teams out of League One, not been able to do it at Portsmouth. Under huge pressure then. Probably will probably lose his job if I was a betting man. I would say that he'd probably lose his job. So it's not a magic formula. So it's not that Chris Hughton's going to be parachuted in and go, right, it's going to be fine, we're going to get to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Because the club is in such a mess, the recent results have been abysmal. As you alluded to, Lamucci's biggest challenge was getting that group of players to respond after that ridiculous turnaround on the final day of the season. He hasn't been able to do it. They've lost Matty Cash to Aston Villa. Mm. Lewis Grabban and Joe Lolley have gone off a cliff. João Carvalho, their record signing, I think has now left the club after being made to train with the reserves for however long it was. There was talk that wasn't even Lamucci's decision as well. There's been a lot of interference, apparently. They've got so many players that you wonder whether Chris Hughton has got the environment around him to be able to succeed here. But I understand why he's taken the job, because, as I say, it's an absolutely gigantic, gigantic job.
I am quite fearful for him in a lot of ways, a lot of them that Luke underlined there. And also that I saw a stat yesterday that Lamucci is the first Nottingham Forest manager since the 2010-11 season to start and finish a season.
Yeah.
Which is astonishing, really. Wow. And also, you know, off the back of what you were saying about him being a really nice guy, obviously that's just his persona, and his professional persona will be a bit more.
Oh God, as a coach, no, yeah. Absolutely. As a coach, he gets a lot of respect from his players. Certainly.
But I suppose that's not the issue at Forest, is it? It's Maranakis is, you know, there's a story of that pre-season Zoom meeting where he comes on and just lays into the players and lays into the team.
While the manager's on the court.
Yeah. And I just think that kind of interference isn't good. And bear in mind, like, if we look back to, you know, 9 months ago, Forest fans were like, right, this is it. This is, we're finally getting our time here. They were in the playoff spots from Christmas, I think, right the way to that last day of the season. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of fell apart. And it was interesting. I kind of scoured Twitter yesterday and this morning for Forest fans and for their opinions. And a lot of them were wishing Lamucci well. And even the ones that weren't were like, God, we're coming back into this spiral now. And that's you know, no disrespect on Hughton's name, but I think there's an element of, God, here we go again. And I think If Chris Hughton does see out the season, I think he should probably consider that a success beyond whatever he's able to do with the side.
Well, I think from Chris Hughton's point of view, and George, you know him better than I do. I've met him a few times, lovely fella. Clearly a good coach at that level, obviously. But his first job is going to be working through all those players and finding a team. And also the problem is, you know, with what's happening with the Football League generally, it's very hard to move those players on, you know. I mean, who's going to buy them? You know, it's not easy just to sell them like it perhaps would be a year or so ago. But he's also got probably a calculated thing here where he thinks, well, do you know what? Forest have tried to do this for years and they've never been able to do it. And as Vish has already said, it's a shit show there. So am I really going to be blamed if in 6 months I get fired? Probably won't hurt his reputation. But on the upside, if he can pull it off, he's a legend. And Nottingham is an incredible place. And Forest fans are mad for it. Really, really mad. And I wonder also whether he might get a good start, because those fans are also quite demanding. If they're not going to be in the stadium, might give him a bit of a boost to kind of get his work done, a bit of breathing space and do it that way. So on one hand, it's a really, really tough job. On the other hand, you know, is it a free hit? Not quite, but it's in that kind of area.
I think, though, that Chris Hughton's a very intelligent man. And like I said already, he's been waiting for the right job. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that he wouldn't have taken this role if he hadn't spoken to the board, spoken to the people that run the club, and known that there is a group of people there that he can work with and try and make a success. Chris Hughton hasn't jumped into any job since he was sacked by Brighton.
He was linked with Bristol City for a while.
Yeah,
wasn't
he was.
He was linked with Watford as well last year, wasn't he?
Right.
And he hasn't jumped into those jobs because there's obviously been something about them that obviously didn't feel quite right for him. He also wants to be a success. He wants to be managing back in the Premier League. He wants to be managing a top flight club, and that's where he should be for the quality and the experience he has. So I have no doubt in my mind that he's taken this job because he knows that this is a club that he thinks he can make a success of. What I think is a really positive thing, and you touched on it then, Luke, is that Nottingham Forest have acted pretty quickly on this in terms of the start of the season. I never like to see managers, you know, lose their jobs early into a season. But the one positive thing in terms of Chris Hughton rather than the Lamucci side of things is that Forest have acted quickly. Chris Hughton now comes in pretty much from the start of the season. He comes in when the domestic transfer window is still open. So you talk about that movement of players, Luke. Mm. There is going to be possibility that perhaps some players could
Who's going to buy him, though?
Yeah, I know, that is the issue. Mm. But at least he still has this 2 weeks where there's an international break now, the transfer window is still open. There will be some movement, I imagine, within this squad in some way, whether it's ins or outs. And then it's almost like a fresh start when we come back after the international break for Chris Hughton and this Forest side, I think.
Yeah. The other thing I didn't mention, which is probably relevant, is that they looked a bit one-dimensional to me as well under Lamucci. They kind of played in this certain way. They weren't really capable of doing much else. And I wonder whether they just got worked out a bit at the start of this season. And Hughton is quite one-dimensional in terms of how he likes to play.
Yeah.
You know, he's not known as a really flexible kind of coach, I wouldn't have said. Maybe that's a bit unfair on him, but I think that's accurate.
I think that's I think that's accurate. You know, that's yeah. pretty much so why he eventually went as the Brighton manager, because yeah. I think they got a bit fed up of...
It's a different challenge in the Premier League when you're in that position, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, completely.
So it's an exciting appointment for Forest. I think they should be excited to have a manager of his pedigree who, at that level... Yeah, he doesn't need to take our word for it. I mean, he's done the business. He's shown that he can do it. So whether he's got the environment to succeed is another story, but we'll find out.
I just don't want to see a sad Chris Hughton.
I
no,
know
same.
Me either, honestly,
he's
Fish.
Got, he's
me
got the
too.
Worst. He's got the worst sad face.
Yeah.
Like Terry Connor.
Yeah. I thought you mean, yeah, Terry Connor. He looked haunted after a while.
You know, when he was linked with the Watford job, I had that fear then because I thought, oh God, if he takes this Watford job, this could end badly
he's
because we know what
him.
Happens to Watford managers. And like you, I don't want to see a
he wants to be managing, though, Jules. You can't. A caged bird doesn't sing as sweetly.
No, of course not.
He wants to be doing what he wants
no,
to be
I'm
doing.
No, I'm glad he's taking
Chris
this Hughton's job.
I bet Chris Hughton's got a great voice.
I bet
he's got a great singing voice as well.
You reckon?
Well, Pete Donaldson was once so excited about Chris Hughton and Newcastle, which, of course, is a club he got promoted, as I mentioned, that he claimed that even Chris Hughton's hair was going black and white in tribute. And that's how much he cared about the club. So he's loved wherever he goes.
He is. And you know what? Last time Forrest hired a previous Brighton manager... Brian Clough.
Oh, there we go. Ah. Yeah.
There
so no pressure on him whatsoever.
No pressure whatsoever, Chrissy Hughton, yeah. But I am so pleased to see
there'll
him back in management.
There'll be a statue there.
Can we put on record, though, if Nottingham Forest hurt one hair on that man's head, we'll be held to
black or white hair.
Yeah.
Great. He's more graying now. Remember that Newcastle he had...
Don't have a dig. He's just got a new
All
job.
Right, sorry.
He
All
looks
right.
lovely. He looks fine.
He looks great. Looks very distinguished.
And he's always wearing a suit on the sidelines, isn't he? Chrissy H.
Top man.
Love it. All right, let's take a break. After this, we'll read your emails and talk Gunnosaurus back in a job.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes to open the door to Amazon. Only we watch with Jesus the 25 minutes first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
And I was like taking all this negativity onto myself, and I did. I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Jermaine Defoe, and this is the Football Ramble.
Oi, oi!
JD. Is he moving the transfer window? No.
Is he still at Rangers?
No.
I'd have to check.
Don't you know what? I'm not sure.
Fish, never ask questions like that on the show that you don't know the answer to.
Hey, yeah, you knew Jermaine Defoe was coming up there, Luke.
I didn't.
Did you make those?
I didn't know that, no.
Did you not?
It's always a surprise to me as well. Jermaine Defoe still is at Rangers, apparently. But I think Pete makes them.
Oh, okay.
He's doing it as a deflection tactic because he hasn't done his email jingle yet. keeps promising, making promises he can't keep on the email front.
Speaking of emails, show@footballramble.com. We love hearing from you guys. Robert Peacock has emailed in, Luke, on the subject of things shouted at football matches.
Oh, yeah. He says, hi, I'm a semi-pro referee in Scotland. Is that a thing? Is that a thing?
I don't know. It's a job. If there was a job you wouldn't want to do, surely it's that.
So I guess he means he gets paid. Because, I mean, I'm not being out of order to Robert, and I will get to the meat of his email in a minute, but if you play Sunday League and you get a referee, I mean, they get paid. Does that make them semi-pro referees?
Yeah, I think
it does.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
I'd call myself a semi-pro footballer if I played at that level.
100%. I'd call you a semi-pro broadcaster, Jules.
Oh, deep. He
is
dug deep there, Vish. Go on, read the email. Let's see if you fuck this up.
I'm going to regret that, aren't I? At some point, I'm going to regret that.
Maybe just enunciate a bit more. Look up when you speak.
Sorry, please. Yeah, I will. So I've not been doing this very long. Robert says, the best thing I've had shouted at me during a game happened after I arrived back from holiday in Spain. After a lovely week in the sun, I had developed a good tan, which clearly looked out of place in the grey Scottish winter. During the game, I awarded a throw-in to a team around the halfway line. No big deal, you think, but someone from the crowd, in the finest Glaswegian accent, shouted, "Oh, fuck off, you sunbed twat."
I love it.
Hilarious and personally tailored of an insult. Of course, I didn't feel it was the right time or place to correct him on the authenticity of my tan. All the best, Robert. Now, that is a shame because he's gone and got that tan on holiday. Now, as someone else once said, you know, I can't take credit for this tan. The sun did most of the work. But he has got an authentic one there, and it's not a sunbed one. And so I feel a little bit sorry for Robert.
Jealous. I want someone to shout that at me because it means I'd be really brown. I've not got a holiday tan this year, Vish. I'm gutted.
Yeah, I mean,
she's the real victim of this pandemic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I realise.
I really am.
I need a tough up as well.
Actually. No holiday for me.
Yeah, you can't really argue your case, can you? It's like, no. This is a genuine tan.
Pull out your boarding pass.
Yeah.
Oh, have a look at that, mate. What does that sound? Eh?
Booking with one hand and boarding pass in the other.
Spain,
yeah.
Malaga. Yeah, Malaga. Oh, they scored. Concentrate on the game, Robert, for goodness sake. I think the guys will probably cover this in detail tomorrow, but I think the leader of the Scottish Conservatives is running the line.
Oh, I heard that.
In the England v Wales game
tomorrow. What's that all about?
Yeah, I don't know. You'll find that tomorrow. Tune in tomorrow. Mm. The team will tell you all about it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Richard Thomas has also emailed in saying, hello all, Everton versus Coventry, 97-98. Fan shouted to Gordon Strachan, who jumped off his bench to question a tackle, sit down, Strachan, you Bay City roller.
It's one for the teenagers. That's even too old for me to remember.
I had to Google Bay City Rollers.
What did you find?
70s kind of boy band type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting that stuff about them being the biggest group since the Beatles, according to many.
Born 1820. Yeah. Gordon Strachan around that time.
From Edinburgh as well. Sorry, I didn't know that.
And you're one of Edinburgh's finest alumni.
Yeah, yeah.
Gordon Strachan around that time. So that's the year after he retired and became, was he player manager or just manager of Coventry? But he had an amazing playing career, Gordon Strachan. And then obviously went on and became a promising manager for a while. Never really kind of did an awful lot. I don't think he won an awful lot as a manager outside of Celtic. But the one thing that I've always forgotten about Strachan is that he is absolutely eviscerated over and over again in Alex Ferguson's first autobiography, where he says, I wouldn't trust him as far as I can throw him. And he just absolutely goes to town on the poor little fella. And I feel quite sorry for him. Because back in the day, if you remember, he used to do quite good post-match interviews. Witty. And can have a quick word with you, Gordon. Velocity. It's a great comeback.
Maybe Ferguson meant that as a compliment, because Strachan is so small, you could throw him quite far. And maybe he did trust him a lot, but he knew he could throw him further.
I don't think he did trust him. And I think he also would have liked to have thrown him, basically.
You don't get many Gordons nowadays, do you?
No. Would you? I mean,
it's
would
a
you,
name that's
You can't name a
extinct.
Baby Gordon.
No.
Can
Why
you?
Not?
How would you react if you went to visit your friend's baby for the first time and they said that his name was Gordon?
Do you know what? This happened quite recently. One of my mates had a baby and texted the WhatsApp group saying, everyone, like, baby girl's arrived, and wrote the name. And the name was Oral, O-R-A-L. And then, like, on side WhatsApp groups, everyone was like, what the hell?
What?
Like, they called their child.
Is it Opal or something?
Yeah, they spelled it wrong. It's Orla.
Orla.
Which
okay.
is a totally normal name, but everyone yeah. for no that one wanted is, to yeah. say anything, because you can't dish your mate for naming a baby what they call it, can you?
I will dish your mate for this. Right?
Go on.
Check the own name yeah. you've spelt in your WhatsApp group of your firstborn child.
It's a tiring time, Luke.
True,
it was
actually,
a long
yeah.
labour, so we'll let him off. But
fair enough.
Yeah, God, yeah, you don't get many baby Gordons, though. I'd quite like to see a baby Gordon.
If your name is Gordon... Gordy. And you're under the age of 25, email in.
Actually, I went to uni with a guy called Gordon. Yeah.
How old would he be now?
He'd be 34
so
now.
So what have I just said? Under yeah. the age of 25. Right. 34 means he'd have been born in 1986.
Yeah.
In the 80s, people are being called Gordon, aren't they? It's the
80s. I don't think there were that many of my generation called Gordon. Although one of my best mates has just had a daughter and called Winifred.
Oh, that's quite cute, Winnie.
Yeah, it is. Winnie, yeah.
Winnie,
yeah,
that's all right.
Because you get to that point where...
Names get recycled,
oh, yeah, exactly,
don't they?
Exactly, mm. yeah. exactly. So you get like an Archie or an Artie. Or an
Archie's
Arthur.
A good name,
Archie's
yeah.
a great name.
Jack Wilshere's son's called Archie.
Well,
I
there
think,
you go,
I
yeah.
think.
Oh, cute.
Yeah.
All right, enough about baby
he's
names.
He's not got a club either.
No, domestic transfer window. We talked about it a minute ago with regards to Forest. So it is still open and there's still a few players that have been linked with clubs that could still potentially make a move. October the 16th is when the domestic window closes. So the likes of Saeed Benrahma at Brentford, Todd Cantwell at Norwich, Ismaila Sarr's been linked with Manchester United, are all being touted. Also, Danny Welbeck, just a couple of days ago, terminated his contract with Watford.
Yeah.
So he could be on the move. How many of these do you think are likely to happen? I mean, I think the Sarr to United one's quite interesting, Vish, because, I mean, we talked about it already. This isn't really where United need to strengthen with a player like Sarr, but would you like to see that happen? I don't think that's a good move for Sarr.
Imagine saying that about a bloke who's playing the Championship.
No, I don't think he is.
Fish's face there was amazing.
No,
he's
I don't
looked
think
so browbeaten
move.
In like such a short amount of time.
He's not going to play.
No, yeah.
Because he's so too good.
You're not you're not wrong. He could pull a Sanchez, wouldn't he? Bloody hell, he's clowns. Join the circus.
Like, he's
here.
Not going to play. And I think he's
go get the piano.
He's a decent player that should be playing football matches. He could go to a different Premier League club
I think you're
and
right.
actually start every game.
I think
he shouldn't be going
on.
To United and sitting on the bench.
I know, but we don't need him and we like doing that kind of stuff. We're like fucking demented sparrows picking up anything shiny yeah. on our little nest.
Isn't that a magpie?
Whatever.
Do you think a magpie is a demented sparrow? Yeah, it's a completely different species of bird.
Sparrows not collect shiny things either.
I think it's magpies.
Magpies
Luke's pretty good with his animal knowledge.
I might be wrong.
You are properly old, aren't you? You like that kind of shit. Bird spying.
Bird spying.
You've turned into a twitcher. That's what they're called, twitchers.
I've got an RSPB book of birds on my kitchen windowsill.
Avian pervert.
What an absolute loser.
I think one of the players who no one is talking about who could command a move to a Premier League side and immediately improve them on a creativity front is Emi Buendia at Norwich City. Now, he's been linked to sides in Turkey.
Would he
maybe
get into United's
budget
side?
Yeah.
You know what? He could do a lot better than United. He is that good. I think his stats last season, he was up there with Kevin De Bruyne in terms of creating chances from open play. He's a brilliant player. I don't know why more teams aren't looking at him, because if there's one thing teams lack, you know, Saïd Benrahma will obviously improve players. I'm not entirely sure about Todd Cantwell. I think he'll need a bit of nursing into being properly consistent Premier League standard. Buendia was one of the standout players for Norwich City. And I know he signed quite a big deal before their Premier League season, so in the summer of 2019. So he might cost a bit more money, but I think he's worth paying for. I think he's the best value player in that division, in the Championship right now.
And Daniel Farke was pretty kind of blasé about Ben Godfrey leaving for Everton.
Yeah.
I heard an interview with him where he said, oh, you know, he leaves with our best wishes. We're really pleased for him. So I'm not sure I really want to be hearing that. I understand the dynamic at play and the fact that the player wants to achieve in his career, but you could probably dampen that down a little bit and say, look, we're really disappointed as well. So what I'm trying to say is I wonder whether Farke would even stand in his way.
Well, he said, Buendia and Cantwell haven't been playing the last few games and he brought back Buendia. He said, I think he had a press conference after the weekend and he said, don't look too much into that. It was just the way the cards have fallen. But with Buendia, I think there was a sense that, right, he's going to move on. But he played him because he was like, he's that good that it'd be foolish for us not to play him. If there was no issue between the manager and the player.
I wonder if there's a disconnect between the kind of appraisal of some of these Norwich players in the commentariat and exactly how much influence and how good they are. Because, I mean, I'm not suggesting that you're wrong on this, Fish, because I think Buendia is a good player as well. But around the middle of last season, people were talking about how Norwich was so good and their players were so great that if they got relegated, every single player would be off straight away. And it's kind of not manifested itself really at all.
Well, I don't think that was ever going to be the case, though, because part of the understanding was that they were going to play that way and be a bit more open, but knowing that they were almost consolidating to go again and have a more sustained period in the Championship, in the Premier League, having used this Championship season to go back up.
Yeah.
That seemed to be the understanding, certainly from Farke's point of view as well, hence why he was never really under pressure, despite the fact that Norwich were relegated in March, basically.
And I know that the guys touched on this kind of briefly yesterday, but in a little bit more depth, have you seen the list of free agents that Pitt play that are still available? I know Mario Götze is probably about to go to PSV based on what I read this morning, but there's a lot of good players around. I mean, Nathaniel Klein, Daniel Sturridge, Danny Welbeck, as you mentioned, Wilshere, question marks over his fitness, fair enough. Alex Pato, Hatem Ben Arfa, Fabio Barini, Mario Mandzukic, Antonio Valencia. There's loads of players out there.
Yeah, Sanogo.
Yeah, exactly. Stephen DeFort, John Flanagan. And what it does is it shows the kind of fickle fate of football.
Oh, Flanners.
Right? Well, Flanagan was held out. What were they calling him at Liverpool? Calling him the Scottish Cafu or something. Is he even Scottish? I don't know, I might have made that up. Something about Cafu.
Two lies in that, isn't it?
He's like a demented sparrow. Just picking up wingers. But there's a lot of points. There's a lot of players around there. And if you think, particularly when you look at the triumvirate of Daniel Sturridge, Danny Welbeck and Jack Wilshere.
Yeah.
These are players who were seen, and I don't think it's a stretch to say, were seen as key players for England not that long ago. Jack Wilshere was seen as this football player in the midfield that you could rest your hopes on. Danny Welbeck performed better for his country than he did for his club. And Daniel Sturridge, I mean, that season at Liverpool alongside Luis Suarez, is a key player for
all
England.
All three of those players have something in common, though.
What's that?
Injury.
Yes, and that's an important part of it, obviously. They have really serious injuries. In fact, Pato, Ben Arfa, Barini, those three have all had problems with injury. So, yeah, that does tell some of the story. The demands on players at the very highest level are very hard physically. So that's got something to do with it.
I think the positive on that, the fact that they are free agents, though, Luke, is a really good point, because I think clubs would maybe look at those players, knowing they're injury prone, and maybe think, oh, do you know, I don't want to buy them because we don't want to spend that money on a player that will probably end up sitting on the bench for quite a few matches during a season. Mm. But actually, as free agents, it does make them that bit more appealing, Vish, doesn't it? I think that especially someone like, what are you laughing
at? I've just checked, Joel Flanagan actually got a cap for England, so I don't think he's got it. Sorry, carry on.
I think that especially with strikers, every single club can always do with another striker. You look at United buying Cavani, you know. It's definitely
a modus operandi that Man United subscribe to, for sure.
I think you're getting John Flanagan confused because his nickname, I think, at Liverpool is Flanny Alves.
Oh, that's what it is, yeah. That's what it is.
What, Alves?
And do you think that...
Flanny. Flanny Alves.
Do you think Edward would have a conversation with the Glazers and talks about strikers and goes, well, you can never have too many, can you? Never have too many. Yeah, I love this. We need as many as possible.
Toilet paper and strikers.
Yeah. You can see, though, that someone like Danny Welbeck probably will get a move in this window, being a free agent. Can't see him.
Look, it depends on his wage demands, depends on the situation around finances. But if a team who is otherwise struggling feels like they could get 15 appearances out of him and 5 goals, if he's free, they're going to take that gamble, right?
I think Danny Welbeck should go to the MLS. I think Danny Welbeck's time in England, certainly the time he wants as a striker, as a main striker, as a focal point of the team going forward, I think that time has passed.
You're shipping him off to America?
Yeah, because I think he'll enjoy it there. I think he will be treated as he deserves to be treated.
Well, how's that?
As a jewel, as a crown. Yeah. a jewel in the crown, rather. I think he, one of the issues of that Danny Welbeck found at Watford was that I don't think physically he was able to command a starting place consistently because they had to work hard. I think Watford brought him with an idea that they were going to be an engaging attacking side as they threatened to be and really kind of come into their own as a top off side, and that just didn't come to fruition, and they were left with basically a mess on their hands where they had these creative players who they needed to turn into kind of workhorses. And that's part of the reason that they are where they are now.
Vish, can I just interject just to ask a quick question? Confirmation from both of you, one way or another, is Welbs still that guy?
He's still that guy.
But he needs to be. He needs to believe that he's that guy now.
Yeah,
and yeah. I don't think he believes it.
Has he still got those hamstrings though?
He has them hamstrings, yeah.
Luke, you're too old for this. Let's move on.
I know. I'm too old for everything, Jules, but I'm still here.
Someone who is no longer departing their club is Gunnosaurus. And I'm not the only one who was sad that Gerry Key, the famous mascot at Arsenal, was going to be losing his job. Mesut Ozil was obviously gutted by this, and he tweeted yesterday saying, "I was so sad that Gerry Key, I think is how you pronounce it, AKA famous and loyal mascot Gunnosaurus, and an integral part of our club, was being made redundant after 27 years. He was actually one of the, 52 members of staff that was being made redundant?
Yeah.
As such, I'm offering to reimburse Arsenal with the full salary of our big green guy, as long as I'll be an Arsenal player, so that Gerry can continue his job that he loves so much." That's quite sweet.
Two Arsenal mascots sticking together.
Stop it.
I mean, that's basically what Ozil is now, isn't it? I love Mesut Ozil, but come on.
The quote also makes it sound like he believes that Gunnosaurus is like an organic living organism, like the big green guy. He doesn't understand it's a man in a suit.
Treat him like a human.
And I've got a rather more cynical take on this, which I'll come to in a minute.
Oh, God, but before Luke's obviously going to make it.
But before I do, is Gerry Key, is he Ray Parler's father-in-law?
I think he is. Someone mentioned that yesterday.
What?
Yeah.
I think really? He might be Ray Parler's father-in-law, yeah, which is an amazing link.
Oh, that's did
incredible.
He? Please tell me he gave away his daughter dressed as Gunnosaurus.
I actually know Ray, so
that
I could ask
is
him.
Amazing.
I could ask
Go
Ray
on,
if you want.
Text him, get on the blower.
I won't text him now.
You don't really know him, do you?
He won't reply.
he won't remember who I am. He won't be up now.
what I was going to say was you've framed that Gunnosaurus story, Jules, very fairly there and very positively.
I'm a nice person.
I think what's probably happened is Mesut Ozil took a phone call from his retained PR company sometime yesterday and said, "What do you think of this idea?" And he said, "It sounds great. How much is it going to cost me? Yeah, okay, I'll do it."
80 grand, apparently.
Vish, what do you think?
80 grand a year. So yeah. What, that's, yeah.
That's a lot of money to pay a mascot.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's not a lot of money for Mesut Ozil, though.
No,
I think he could drop that and, you know, move on pretty comfortably. Yeah.
Am I being too cynical?
No, I mean, I just think it's... I just think it's such bullshit. I kind of don't really care about it. But I mean,
sorry for bringing it up.
Fish, you're a broadcaster. You have to pretend to care about stuff. That's how it works.
But it was just the way that like Arsenal started doing semi-serious things. You know, like, you know, Thomas Partey, I like that. You know, good signing. They seem to be building towards the right direction. And then this happens, and you're like, just be a normal club for a little bit. Just try and be, you know, try and get rid of this. Is not a time for nonsense. People are, you know. The crux of it is a bloke who has lost his job in, you know, amid all that is being saved by Mesut Ozil, who was one of the players who was openly not taking the pay cut for Arsenal. And I think, actually, in a way, that Mesut Ozil's stance back then when he was asked to take a pay cut and refused has, you know, certainly at the time it was, you know, he was pilloried for it, but I think... Given that all the cuts...
A bit more nuanced than what people were saying. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And yeah. I think given the cuts that have happened, despite the fact that the players took a pay cut, I think it sheds a lot of light on the kind of people that are running Arsenal Football Club and the fact that Mesut Ozil had to come out and do this, even though it's clearly a massive PR stunt, is quite an indication of where the club are at above Arteta. I feel like they've controlled everything from Arteta down and now... Yeah. You can have more eyes on what's going on up top.
I mean, I should say, if we're going to be semi-serious for a moment, that I don't think that the two things are mutually exclusive. I don't think Mesut Ozil getting a good PR win and doing something quite clever and someone having their job saved, who is an important part of the culture of the club and is a bit of a legend, certainly among the online fan base, they can, those things can both be true. Yeah. It doesn't mean he's not done a good thing. You know, it's like when people say, oh, you know, giving all that money to charity because you save on the tax. Well... Okay, that is the case, probably, but I'm still going to lend money to charity. I mean, there's still an end game here where a lot of people benefit from this. So I'm not saying it's a purely cynical move and there's no benefit to it. Of course I'm not. But what Arsenal need to do, I think, what Vish is kind of alluding to, is that the top brass at Arsenal should probably look at the optics a bit more of that kind of stuff, particularly announced on the same day that they've signed a player for, you know, a huge amount of money, a huge amount of money in wages as well. So yeah, look, it's a fun story. Good on Ozil for doing it, but he benefits from it as well. Good for him. So what?
I still can't get over Gunnosaurus walking his daughter down the aisle.
Yeah, could have happened
in the suit.
Yeah, I mean, he must have done it. I think
did he do the speech dressed as Gunnosaurus?
what's Gunnosaurus's voice like?
It's just a t-shirt cannon, isn't it? As far as the speech out from a cannon.
Maybe that's how he gave the rings out.
Take your baseball cap off, it's a wedding.
I think Gunnosaurus has been involved in some weddings, hasn't he? I think like that's because I know people talk about the 80,000, but I think he's kind of a year-long club ambassador. He obviously does a lot of stuff going to children's hospitals and things like that. And
love that we're talking about him like he's a fictional thing. There's a real man in there.
He is, yeah.
I know, but like the... I know. Why could they just... I didn't realise it had to be one person all the way through.
Well, yeah, neither, actually. I always thought mascots swapped.
Well, I was going to say that earlier, but I didn't want to sound too harsh.
You're a mascot wherever you go. Do you know what I mean?
I was going to say...
One week you're Gunnosaurus and next week you're the West Brom boiler.
Yeah. Freelance mascots.
I didn't want to sound too harsh, really, but I was going to say, well, couldn't they just get someone else to do it? It's a bit cheaper. Do you know what I mean, though? Because if you're going to save money, then I don't know. It's just
apparently there's like the deep dark world of mascots, and apparently some clubs used to try and bid for the mascot. You know, they do those races.
Yeah.
Which mascot's the quickest?
Cyril the Swan.
The quickest mascot gets paid the most money. That's what I've heard.
Oh, really?
I've heard that they kind of like bid for the quickest.
I remember the mascot race over some steeplechase at some horse racing circuit, course. And there was kind of a bit of a punch-up between Cyril the Swan and someone else, I think.
Cyril the Swan's quite leery, though, isn't he?
Right. Well, break your arm.
Swans are evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Break your arm. Yeah. Be careful.
I would quite like to see someone... be really bad at being a mascot. I want to see someone terrible doing Gunnosaurus' job, like shooting himself in the foot with a t-shirt cannon.
All right.
Like getting someone in the eye, yeah. Or, you know, just being a bit of a twat.
There we go.
How
can you follow that?
I don't know. We're going to end now. I'm back tomorrow. I'm going to be here with Jim and Andy. Has Ray Parler texted you back yet?
He hasn't. But one thing I would say, shout out to Andy Brassel for being the chairman of the Residents Association, as I found out yesterday. In the lovely part of London that is Camberwell, Brassel stepped up and been a bit of a community leader.
Stop it.
So good for him.
I'll ask him about that tomorrow.
Yeah, ask him about tomorrow. I want him to change his Twitter bio. So the campaign starts here. He could just have European football expert, football ramble, and then chairman of the Residents Association in Camberwell.
Oh, he's so clever, isn't he?
He is. He could do everything, Andy.
God's sake. Right, I'll talk to him about that tomorrow.
A a real clever person would have got out of that somehow, but he's so nice that, you know what I mean? He's just the nicest bloke in the world, so he would probably just volunteer to do it.
100%. Mm. Fish, you all right?
Yeah, good. Because I've kind of thought he'd make a really good dad, wouldn't he, Brassel?
He is a dad.
Yeah, but like as in like my dad.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure we can make that happen.
You want to adopt him as your dad?
Yeah, that'd be quite cool.
Yeah, he's older than me. I just at least start on him. He's older than me.
All right, Luke, say bye.
Goodbye.
Fish.
Bye.
Laters, guys.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.